Why do the nations conspire, and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. He rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, you are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way, for his wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him.
Having a good laugh at what we see, and one that's grabbed us most at the moment is Family Feud. And if you watched that again, that show's been around forever. You remember who used to host that show? It was Tony Barber, I think, hosted it, and Daryl Summers, and all those sorts of guys. Well, it's reincarnated. It's back on TV again. And you know how it goes. We surveyed 100 people. We got their answers to these questions, and the people try and guess what the top answers to the survey was. Well, I mention that because that's like our approach to preaching in these last few weeks. This is the Family Feud approach. We are in a series looking at the big issues, and they are the top issues that are obstacles to people coming to faith in Jesus. And when we came up with the list of what we would talk about, we didn't just sit around a table and say, well, what do you reckon? We based this series on research done by McCrindle Research into Australian communities. In other words, we looked at what the survey said, and we got the top answers, and we said, that's what we're going to preach on. And the survey said that science was one of the major factors that block people from believing in Christianity. Now, I must admit that I am not a scientist by training. My training is in history and theology and putting the toilet seat down. So I needed to dig around a little bit on this question. My formal scientific training ended in high school with dissecting rats and getting your hair to stick up by putting it on that static electricity engine thingy. Right? But I have done some digging, and what I've found is fascinating. So what I hope to do this morning is to look at two reasons, I think the two main reasons why this is raised as an objection, and then look at some answers to those objections. So why do people say that science is a blocker to their belief in Jesus? Well, reason number one, I think they say, well, science and religion aren't compatible. Science and religion aren't compatible. Some people say that, look, science is about truth and it's about facts, whereas Christianity is about belief and myth and guesswork. They say you can't agree with science and the modern way of thinking and still subscribe to anything that talks about faith. This is what some people say. Well, I think there are three things to say to those people who might raise science as an objection on these grounds. Firstly, we need to understand that lots of science is aiming at truth, but would never claim to have arrived at it. Lots of science is aiming at truth, but would never claim to have arrived at it. So I have a friend who is literally an astrophysicist. He spends his time looking through telescopes into the far, far outer reaches of space. And one day I said, look, what is it that you actually do? Right? And he said, well, What I do, Keith, this is my job. I get paid for looking at things through telescopes and then coming up with theories to try and explain what it is that I see, and then the next day going in and looking in the telescope again to try and disprove the theory that I came up with yesterday. And I do that over and over again. It's lots of fun. I said, is that right? He said, well, that's true of so much of science. Science is hypothesis. It's educated guess. It's taking what can be observed and trying to put that into a theory and then seeing whether the theory continues to hold. It's paradigm, testing paradigm, shifting paradigm when it needs to be shifted. Lots of scientists, if you ask them, what is it that you know, we know about your field, they say, well, what we think we know at the moment is dot, 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 dot. And so when some people say, you know, science doesn't fit with God, they're incompatible, my guess is that they think that all of science is like the statement, water boils at 100 degrees Celsius. We know that as a fact. And the reality is, science is not all like that at all. So it's good to recognize lots of science is aiming at truth but would never claim to have arrived at it. Secondly, it's important to recognize that there are more roads to truth than just science. There are more roads to truth than just science. Science cannot tell you whether the dismissal happened in 1975. But I'm guessing that none of you doubt that that actually happened, that that is true. Is that right? Okay. It did happen. That's true. Science can't tell you that. Science can't tell you whether your spouse or your child or your grandchild really loves you. Gentlemen, if you're married, the next time your wife asks you if you really love her, don't get out a specimen jar and say, well, we'll see in 24 hours, won't we? Okay, that's not going to work. On all sorts of levels, that's not going to work. Just take it from me, okay? Science cannot comment on the back and forth of human culture like music or poetry or painting or any of the arts can. And yet all of those things point us to truth. All of this is to say that science can contribute to our understanding of Christianity and the world that God has made, but Christianity's truth claim doesn't rest solely on things that lie in the realm of scientific method. Christianity's truth claims also includes things like history and personal experience and testimony and the overall explanatory power of the Christian worldview for the world that we see around us and that we experience as human beings. So there are more roads to truth than just science. Those who say that science and Christianity are incompatible, I think, are saying science is the road to truth and it's found it. And that's just not true of the way we go about living in the world. The third thing to say about those who say that science and Christianity are incompatible is that there seem to be a lot of scientists who don't think that they're incompatible. I went to Bible college with guys, a lot of guys way, way smarter than me. There was a guy in my year who had a PhD in electron microscopy. Right? He used to look through microscopes at things. He taught at Sydney University in the science department. There was another guy in my year who had a PhD in pure mathematics. Now, I asked him once, look, what is pure mathematics? And he told me once, and I still didn't understand. I said, look, my idea of pure mathematics is when the number on my team's side of the scoreboard is bigger than the number on the other team's side of the scoreboard. That's about as pure maths as you kind of want to see. There was another guy who had a PhD in the medical field, who was the year above me at college. They all had no issues with science and their relationship with Jesus living together. At my last church where I served, there were scientists. One lady there was literally a rocket scientist. Literally. I kid you not. My first ever sermon there, I said something like, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to work that out. And she came up to me afterwards and she said, no, you don't, but it doesn't hurt. There was another guy there who was the emeritus professor of geology at Macquarie University. Another guy was that astrophysicist I talked to you about who was so bright that he won a scholarship to bring him and his family over from England to work here in Australia looking through our telescopes. None of them had issues with their relationship with Jesus and the high level of science in which they were operating. And there are scientists, of course, at the top level. There are lots and lots of names. Alistair McGrath at Oxford University. Simon Conway Morris is the professor of evolutionary paleobiology at Cambridge. Francis Collins in the US is the head of the Human Genome Project, trying to map the complete genetic makeup of human beings. A devout Christian. None of these people have any issues being scientists at the top level and Christians. Now, that shouldn't be a surprise that many people find science and Christianity are compatible when you see what science really is. According to the Oxford Dictionary, science is the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Right? Systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Notice what it says. It's the study of physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Notice what that definition doesn't say. It doesn't say it's the study of those things with the belief that that is all there is. It doesn't say science is the study of the natural world with the belief that there cannot be anything else. That's not what science is. But this highlights for us where some of the supposed conflicts between science and Christianity actually lies. See, science as a discipline doesn't require us to believe one thing or another. It's simply a way of looking at the world and trying to understand it. And so a Christian can happily be a scientist and a very good and respected one. The conflict arises when people want to use science as a tool to say that this world, the material world, is and must be all that there is. That's actually a worldview called naturalism. That is where people like Mr. Dawkins land. They assume that because science can tell us so much about the natural world, then the natural world is all that we can know about. Right? They say that because science can tell us so much about the natural world, then the natural world is all that there is and all that we can know about. And that's just a logical fallacy. Science itself as a discipline doesn't necessitate that you believe that. As I said, there are lots and lots of Christians who are scientists who have won Nobel Prizes for their endeavors in the scientific realm, happily believing that there is a God who made us and a supernatural realm and a heaven and a hell and all of that sort of stuff. So, the idea that you shouldn't believe in Christianity if you think science is something positive to say is just false. That's the reason, number one, why people, I think, will throw this up as a blocker for belief in Christianity. They say, you can't believe science and be a Christian. And that's just not true for all of those reasons. But there's another reason why I think science is mentioned as an obstacle to believing in Christianity, and it's this one. I think some people say science has explained the origin of the world and the origin of people, and therefore we don't need a creator anymore. Science has explained our origins, and so we don't need a creator anymore. People used to believe that when we didn't know as much, but now we know more, we don't need to believe that anymore. I think in most people's minds, they think that evolution is a fixed and accepted explanation amongst the scientific community for where human beings come from, and that the Big Bang has something to do with where it all started, and so you've got evolution and the Big Bang, and there you go, there's those things, and so we don't need a creator. At least that's my experience with talking with people. I say, we don't need God because we've got the Big Bang and we've got evolution. I said, well, Why does that mean we don't need God, even if those things are true? Well, I want to leave aside evolution for a moment, mainly because I don't think it settles things one way or another, because there are plenty of Christians who are scientists who believe that evolution is the way things happened and that God could have used evolution to bring about the way he wanted things to be. But even if you believe in evolution, you're forced to go backwards. You're forced to keep going, what came first? What came before this? Complex things come from simpler things. So we've got to go all the way back and say, where did it all start? Or with what did it all start? And when you go back there, where did it all start? With what did it all start? Things get very, very interesting indeed. And I owe these points to a gentleman called John Lennox, who's a professor at, I think, is it Oxford or Cambridge, one of those two, who's written some books on this. Three things, okay? Just stay with me for some rudimentary basic science to say why the origins of the earth don't say that we don't need a God. Number one, proteins. I didn't know anything about this before I read, right? But forgive my crude amateur biology. My understanding is some of the very basic blocks of human life are proteins. And so when you're asking the question, where did life come from? You're asking, where did the proteins come from? You need proteins for life. Where did the proteins come from? In the 1950s, they did an experiment. A couple of guys did an experiment where they tried to guess what the gases would have been at the beginning of a primitive world that came from the Big Bang. They tried to guess that. They put all those gases into a chamber and they fired lots of electricity into it, saying, well, that's what would have been around. It would have been lightning strikes and electricity. And so they just ran electricity through these gases over and over and over. They put them in a chamber and see what happens. And what they got was some sludge which contains some basic amino acids which go up to making proteins. And everyone got excited. The media jumped all over it and said, look, 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 we got some acids out of nothing. So life could have come from nothing. We don't need God. But then they realized, actually, just with a few of those acids, we're a long, 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 long way from life. Because even if you were able to get all of the amino acids that make up a protein, which they didn't, all those acids and things have to come together in a very specific way to make a protein. Now, if that messes with your head, which it did with mine, the non-Christian scientist Paul Davies put it like this, which I think captures it well. He said, making a protein simply by injecting energy is rather like exploding a stick of dynamite under a pile of bricks and expecting it to form a house. You may liberate enough energy to raise the bricks, but without coupling the energy to the bricks in a controlled and ordered way, there's little hope of producing anything other than a chaotic mess. So the scientific mood on that experiment now, 50, 60 years later, is that that doesn't really show us much about the origin of life at all. We're a long, long way off from determining an exclusively natural process for creating the basic blocks of human life. Okay? Long way away from creating proteins. So that's reason number one. Maybe it's number two. Let's assume that we could get all of the proteins. We could get proteins out of this experiment. The reality is that life as we know it is made up of hundreds and thousands of different proteins. Hundreds of thousands of them. And not just randomly thrown together in a pot and shaken around like a martini. All those proteins have to come together in a very, very specific way in order for there to be life. And so some scientists who get off on this kind of thing worked out the odds. If you had all the proteins made of them coming together randomly to make life, the odds are 1 in 10 to the 40,000. Now, that's a number too big to wrap our head around. That would be like having 2 6-sided dice and rolling double six 50,000 times in a row. That's pretty small odds. Or, as the mathematician Sir Fred Hoyle put it, again, I love it, He says, the chances of forming life spontaneously are the same as the chances of a tornado sweeping through a junkyard and producing a 747 jet aircraft. So the chances of life forming spontaneously without any design agent, any intelligence involved, are 1 in 10 to the power of 40,000. And I'm afraid I don't have enough faith to believe in that. That is too far out for me to put my faith in as an explanation for the origins of life. But that's not the clincher in my book, Proteins, Life. The clincher is information. Now, we are very, very clever as human beings. We are so clever that we have put this device on the planet Mars. This is the Mars rover. I don't know if you've ever seen this or heard of this. This thing is traveling around Mars, taking pictures, collecting soil samples, doing tests on board and sending the test results back to Earth. That's incredible, isn't it? That's amazing. Now, let me ask you, if this Mars rover sent back pictures from Mars of pyramids that look like the ones in Egypt, what do you think most people would think? Well, do you think that they would say, oh, look at those pyramids and their order and their shape? The wind and storms must have randomly created three shapes of exact symmetry right next to each other out of separate blocks. Isn't nature wonderful? Or do you think most people would have said, look at those things, they seem to have been designed. They seem to have been built by some sort of intelligence, even though we don't know what that might be. I think our experience with buildings would lead us to the second conclusion, that what we see makes us think that there was design and intelligence involved. But here's the thing, right? In the last 30 years or so, scientists have been discovering more and more about our basic genetic buildup, DNA. They've discovered that our genes are stocked full of information. This is the language they use. They say our bodies are like a digital, our genes are like a digital information bank. And all of that information goes to making up who we are. Now, in our experience of life, the only time we encounter information is when there's been an intelligence involved with creating that information. You don't encounter information in the wild. Information suggests an intelligence, a designer, a creator. And so as the biophysicist Dean Kenyon writes, he's not a Christian, he says, if science is based on experience, then science tells us that the message encoded in DNA must have originated from an intelligent cause. Science tells us that. What kind of intelligent agent was it? On its own, science cannot answer this question. It must leave that to religion and philosophy. But that should not prevent science from acknowledging evidences for an intelligent cause origin wherever they may exist. You get what he's saying here? When biologists go back to the very basic blocks of human life, our DNA, they find them filled with incredible complexity. It's the biological equivalent of landing on Mars and finding not just a few pyramids, but a whole city like Sydney, and saying, wow, isn't nature wonderful to have thrown that up randomly? Some want to see that and say, look at that, look what can happen by random chance. But others want to see that and say, the heavens declare the glory of God, and so do the very cells of our body. And so, proteins, life itself, and the information in our DNA, all points at which science has not done away with God as our creator. In fact, the scientific discoveries made in this area of the origins of life point more and more and more to God's handiwork and beauty and skill. It seems a curious decision to stubbornly attribute all of this to blind chance. That seems like a rather non-scientific, non-evidence-based approach to me. Perhaps there's something else more than science driving that approach. You see, for a Christian has no problem with science, for we know the one who both makes science possible, created it in the first place, and continues to make it possible. Colossians 1:15, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over creation, for in him all things were created. Things in earth, things in heaven and things on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authority, all things have been created through him and for him. We know the designer. We know who it is. We know the intelligence behind the amazing complexity of life and the origins of life. But not only do we know who he is, he's before all things, and in him all things hold together. He's the one who makes science possible in the first place. Science is only possible if our universe is basically static, so you can keep seeing the same things happen over and over again. That's because of Jesus. But not only that, he's the wonderful thing. He's the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on heaven or things in earth, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. The designer became one of us. Not just to show who he was, but to show that he's personal. And he wants you and me to be in relationship with him. Not just now, but for all eternity. And that is why we can say the heavens declare the glory of God. Because we are in a relationship with the Creator. Let me pray. Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for the incredible things that have been discovered by science. We thank you for the beauty and the complexity that both fills minds with wonder and baffles minds. We thank you that your fingerprints are all over it, that everything we discover shows how amazing and incredible and complex and beautiful you are. And we thank you that you came to show us that in person, that we might not have to stare at the stars and wonder, but that we can know you personally and so be filled with wonder as we look around and see, this is your handiwork, Jesus. Thank you for knowing and loving me. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.